David Scrantz and James Cooper. Guys, good morning. How are you doing today?
Doing good.
Good morning.
It's good to have you in today, and we'll go ahead and get started here with David first. And David, you're going to be talking about two things today. You're going to be talking about record keeping and aquatic weeds.
Yes, so they're kind of two completely different topics in a way, but I have been getting quite a few questions still about aquatic weeds, so I just wanted to talk about those briefly again. So aquatic weeds, they're really flourishing this time of year under the hot temperatures, especially when we don't have a lot of wind, so the water's not moving around a whole lot. That's when they're really able to take off and thrive. So as it will hopefully start to cool down in September, should be seeing less problems with aquatic weeds. But James and I were just visiting before we went on air, and I was mentioning that I've had really a variety of questions related to different types of aquatic weeds this year. Most years it's mainly just about filamentous algae, which is the common green algae you see on ponds, but I've also had quite a few questions about coontail, pondweed, water primrose. So if you notice aquatic weeds in your pond and they're kind of starting to take over your pond or getting in the way of fishing, basically if they're becoming a nuisance and you want to control them, it's very important to identify what type of weed you have first, so you know the... So then after you know what type of weed you have, you can find a type of herbicide that's approved to control that weed. So if you have a weed in your pond that you're not sure what it is, I would be happy to come take a look at it for you. Some folks have also emailed me pictures or sent me a text with pictures of the different types of weeds they have in their pond, and then I can identify them and give them recommendations on the different herbicides and how they're rated to control those aquatic weeds. And a lot of times ponds may have more than one type of aquatic weed. You may be dealing with two or three different types of aquatic weeds, and then we can go through and find a herbicide that will treat and kill all three of those types of aquatic weeds. So after you have identified the aquatic weed and we've established what type of herbicide or your options of herbicides to use on it, once you purchase that herbicide, it's really important to follow the label directions for the application of that herbicide, so you apply the correct amounts in the correct way and get those weed problems under control, hopefully. And I've also gotten a few questions about testing for blue-green algae in people's ponds, and if that's a concern you have, I would be happy to discuss that with you. Do you test blue-green algae? I just want to briefly mention there is a test for that. We send it to the diagnostic lab at the vet school on campus. If you're wanting to test your pond, if you have a concern about blue-green algae. And if you are concerned about blue-green algae in your pond, you'll want to prevent any animals from drinking out of that pond until you get it confirmed if it is blue-green algae or not. And then, of course, if it is blue-green algae, you want to keep those animals off the pond until it's no longer an issue.
And like you said, and we've actually had several lakes around the area dealing with blue-green algae. I know Big Lake had it for a while. I think they've been, it's gone from, I think it went from warning back to kind of a watch.
Yes.
Altamont, both Altamont lakes have had, and then the one up north, Parsons Lake, I think. Was it Parsons Lake? It's either part, had it as well. And there was another one near Erie as well that got it as well. So, and that a lot of that is just due to just the stagnant water, right? Correct. It's not, it just kind of doesn't move much, right? And also it just is it because of the aquatic weeds that causes that?
No, aquatic weeds don't cause blue-green algae. Algae is considered an aquatic weed, and then blue-green algae is a type of aquatic weed. So it is, like you were saying, the kind of the stagnant water, not a lot of water movement, the increased temperatures, and then with algae, especially blue-green algae, the nutrient levels in the water can also play a role in it.
Yeah, they said, I think they were saying it's okay to boat, but if you're going to go fishing, mate, you need to wash that fish off really good.
Yes.
At that point, I don't know if I'd go fishing, though, just to be on the safe side of it. But again, watching out for that blue-green algae. And like you said, hopefully we'll get these cooler temperatures to come in, and some of that will kind of cut out for the year. All right, we're going to go ahead over to James here for just a few minutes before we need to go to break. James, we'll probably break this up into two segments today. Actually, I don't think we got the record keeping just yet, did we?
That's okay.
No. Sorry. I was that's what happens when you're doing 10 things at once. Yeah. So let's go ahead and get with the record keeping, Dave, and we'll get to Jay. I want to kind of keep them compartmentalized. David, you're talking about record keeping today, correct?
Yes, I also wanted to talk about record keeping. I kind of had sheep and goats in mind with this topic, but it is an important topic for any type of livestock. And for sheep and goat producers, they're already in the middle of breeding season, or they're preparing for breeding season. And this is a great time to start record keeping if you don't really have a good process figured out for that, or maybe you want to improve your record keeping. And one of the first and kind of an easy way to start off with that is it's important when you turn the ram or the buck in with your does and ewes to mark what date you turned them in on your calendar. I know a lot of folks pen breed, which just means that they turn the buck in with the pasture of does and leave them in there for a month or two. So having that first date that he was turned in marked on your calendar, and then writing down the day that you pulled him out, that way you at least know the general time frame those does and ewes can be kidding and lambing in the spring to help you prepare for that. And then if you want to get a little bit more exact, there's different options such as a breeding harness that the buck or ram can wear. It's kind of similar to the type of harnesses you see on dogs, but it has a crayon marker that is on the bottom of it, so it sits on their chest between their front legs. So when they breed a doe, it will leave a colored mark on the back of that doe. So then you can check for those marks every day and write down when you see that a new one is marked, and then change out the color of crayon about every 19 to 21 or 20 days. Does come into their next heat cycle every 21. So changing that color about at day 19, if a doe didn't take the first time she was bred and was rebred, then you can mark that date as well. And that will give you a better idea of when those does or ewes will be having their kids and lambs come spring. And then also, as you prepare for breeding, if you haven't turned the bucks and rams in yet, if you do any deworming or hoof trimming, vaccinating, which are all good things to do in preparation of breeding season, writing those things down, whether you do it on an Excel sheet or a notebook or even just a calendar, but having an ideal to keep track of that, especially deworming. If you do a Fomantra score, if you write down that the doe was a 4 Fomantra score and then the next time you check she's a 3, that can give you an ideal that she's improving and doing good. The same thing with body condition scores. And keeping records like that when it comes springtime, and then you're weaning the kids and maybe you want to keep a few doe kids back and get rid of some older does or some poor doers, looking back at those records and seeing how many times you had to deworm a doe or which ones got sick throughout the year are all things that can help you make those decisions of which ones you want to keep and which ones you want to sell.
All right. So, again, some good record keeping stuff there for you. And, David, if anybody has any questions about aquatic weeds or record keeping or anything within your expertise, how can they get a hold of you?
They can, of course, reach me by calling any one of our extension office. The the number for the Independence office is 620-331-2690.
All right. Well, David, thank you so much. And now we'll get over to James here. And, of course, we'll break this into two segments. But talking about worms and soybeans and pastures and yards, and this has kind of been a big deal this summer. You would have thought, you know, with the hard freeze and all that, that probably wouldn't be as bad this year. No, they're actually out in full force this year, are they not?
You can't really judge freezes by, you know, insects. It just they just do their thing. There have been worm outbreaks basically in all of eastern Kansas and Missouri, Oklahoma, just in this area. And these worm outbreaks, probably a lot of fall armyworm, but they've been a real issue and they've caused a lot of damage. I mean, they can defoliate so quickly in a matter of days. They can just clean out a yard or a soybean field or something like that. So we really got to keep an eye on them. And even now, we're kind of already a little bit past the outbreak. But we still got another month and a half of good weather that they could definitely outbreak again. So we got to keep an eye on them.
That's right. And we'll talk more about that coming up after the break. And we'll get full into this because, again, like you said, James, they are just, it's basically been an outbreak this year with the all kinds of different worms and whatnot. And they are definitely not good to our fields and yards. So let's go ahead and take that break. And when we come back, we will have that conversation with James. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. And good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Greenside Up right here on to the Mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High with you this morning. Also in studio with me, David Skrantz and James Coover. And, of course, David, in her first segment, she talked about aquatic weeds and record keeping. We'll have that. Of course, since we record the program, you'll be able to listen to it on our website, kggfradio.com. Let's go ahead and get to the second part of our program, talking to James Coover about worms in soybeans, pastures, and yards. And we talked a little bit about it before the break, but you wanted to talk about the worm outbreaks that have been occurring in the area. So what are these worms and what sort of damage are they causing?
Yes. And so these worms, well, first I should clarify that these are moth worms. And so these are not, you know, earthworms. Right. And so, you know, moth is worms, butterflies, it's caterpillars. They're the same thing. So pretty much over the past few weeks, there have been outbreaks, more or less, of these worms, and of various sorts, too. And so their populations have increased considerably. Part of that is because of the cycle of worms. And so right now we're on the second to third cycle of some of these worms. And so that's why their populations are so much higher. If they have favorable conditions in the beginning, they can have great big populations later on in the season. So we could even have one more outbreak later on too before we get to that first freeze. So these worms, they can quickly eat in a matter of days. I'm talking soybean fields, yards, pastures, just about anything they can eat. And so corn is already kind of drying down, so we're not worried about corn anymore, at least in the crop wise. We're worried about soybeans and alfalfa. Those are the two main things that they can be damaging. You know, and they can be a problem in pastures and yards. For the most part, though, they're just going to be eating stuff down, and then there's going to be regrowth after that. So they can make things look bad, but they're not going to do actually a whole lot of economic damage because all those things are perennials. And so, you know, so when it comes to people's yards, I mean, that's another thing that you can actually treat for and have concern with. I know a lot of people who listen to the show are gardeners, you know, and they want a nice yard too. And so that is definitely a piece that they need to be looking at. So most likely these outbreaks were caused by the fall armyworm. It's called the fall armyworm, but we actually see them a little bit during the summer. And then their populations increase a couple of times. And then we see them really heavy in the fall, which is why we say fall armyworm. They can almost get to 2 inches. You can identify a fall armyworm from the other armyworms because they have actually black dots down the back of their side. And so if you look for those black dots, that's probably what you've got. They also have some yellow stripes. That's a little bit harder to tell because they all have yellow stripes. They don't overwinter here. The moths fly in June. They lay their eggs. They're little tiny things, and they about every 30 to 45 days they'll complete a cycle. So for a moth, egg, 5-instar larvae, and then they'll pupate, turn back into a moth and back to eggs again. That's 45 days. And so it's real fast if you think about it. And so they were first caused by the first issue. The wave of this was actually in the young double crop soybeans. And so the first wave, when those moths came in, a lot of those young double crop soybeans that were planted in June, sometimes a little bit later than we wanted to, they caused a lot of damage there too. I mean, just completely wiped out some of those young fields. And now, of course, after that all happened, we had a huge population load in the first wave, and now we got another one. So it's just, it continues on years that they're an issue. The true army worm and the yellow-striped army worm, those are actually ones that do overwinter here. And these, they're all called army worms, and they're not even in the same family. I mean, they're not really the same, but they've all got the same name. Some migrate here from the south. They're often worse in the early season in the wheat. And so these army worms, the true army worms, they actually prefer grass species. And so they're an issue in the wheat early on. And they get less apt to be a problem later on just because they've got a lot of predators and other things are eating on them. However, they can still be a problem because they've got 3 to 4 cycles during the year as well. So it's important to know what it is that you're dealing with because the treatment thresholds and all that's going to be different. You know, true army worms, they have white and orange stripes down their back. The yellow army worm, it's actually just yellow stripes. They look pretty similar. The difference is between the black dots and the not black dots. That's how you tell the difference between the two. However, you know, no matter which army worm you've got, it's going to be pretty close to the same of how you're going to deal with them. So,
what can you do if you've been infested with army worms? Because, again, like you said, this can destroy things very quickly. So what can we do in case we have an infestation?
Yeah, so the first thing to do is to know exactly where in the life cycle these army worms are. And, of course, you know, these fields can be treated, or yards. They can be treated by with a pesticide, and there's all kinds of different pesticides. They're not very resistant to many pesticides. They're feeding directly on the foliage, so if you spray the foliage, you're going to get them. And if you're thinking about, you know, you don't want a bunch of pesticides in your yard, there are some organics too. And it's like back to Terrillus, the same thing in BT corn. That's actually works pretty well on these worms. And so, you know, but you also have to know where they are at in their life cycle, which is the instars. They start off pretty tiny. You can hardly even see them in their first couple of instars, but then they get bigger and bigger and bigger. By their fifth instar, they're almost 2 inches long. And the vast majority of their damage is done in their fifth instar. The problem is they're only in that instar for 3 or 4 days. And then after that, they're going to turn into a moth and fly away. So there's no point in treating them once they've gotten to that point where they're almost done with their cycle. But within that last 3 days right before that is when you need to treat them, or when they do the most damage. So you got to catch them early and know exactly what it is. And usually there's multiple instars in the field at the same time. So it is hard to approximate what really needs to be done at the right time. There are all kinds of pesticides. We have a list publication that basically lists them all out, the triazoles and the carboxyls and all sorts of other things. There's a bunch of them. And, you know, there are some really fancy pesticides, the kind of newer ones, and they last a little bit longer. But the generics, they do a pretty good job too. And so you don't always need to spend a whole lot of money when it comes to sprays for these things. However, we also, you know, soybeans, they can take a lot of damage. A lot of farmers don't realize just how much damage soybeans can take, and it doesn't even affect yield because soybeans way overcompensate on their leaf area. I would say about 30% early on they can take damage and not see any yield. At this point, when they're actually filling pods, about 20% leaf area damage, and you're still not going to see yield loss. And that 20% can look way worse than it actually is. So.
All right, so are army worms the only issue, or are there other pests causing damage right now?
There are all kinds of pests out there. I mean, we're in the late summer season, and so every insect is out there at this point. I mean, we're really seeing all kinds of things. And so soybeans, they are definitely the pest crop because there's all kinds of stuff that eats them. I'm talking about wedworms, thistle caterpillars, the green clover worm that really takes off this time of year. There's grasshoppers, there's stink bugs, there's loppers, I don't know, the list is at least over a dozen different insects out there. And those are just the common ones, honestly. So it can be an issue. Grasshoppers are actually getting pretty bad, especially in pastures. In western Kansas, because there's less stuff out there for them to eat, they're actually getting almost, I mean, an outbreak level of grasshoppers. And so they're really starting to defoliate things out there. And, you know, that's happened in years past. They've gotten to the biblical locust level of damage. And so, I don't know, it's getting pretty pretty close there. And so, apparently, you know, also stink bugs are pretty bad this year, too. Stink bugs, I mean, the same thing in the gardens. They're little, those little tiny shield-looking bugs. And the problem with them is they feed directly on the soybean. And so their threshold of treatment, basically the damage that they cause, is way worse because they're feeding directly on the product that we're trying to produce. And so their treatment threshold is fairly low. I mean, if you see one or two stink bugs per couple of plants, that's the treatment threshold. And it's not hard to find that many stink bugs out there. And so really, there's all kinds of stuff. Some of it's worrisome and some of it's not. Just because you see some bugs out there, don't freak out. Every soybean field has lots of bugs. You just got to determine which ones at what size are going to be an issue.
And so how are these bugs found in the field? Are they hard to find in those soybeans?
They can be. I mean, soybeans, you know, they're up to waist high by now. And so this is a big plant that you're dealing with. So what you do now at this point is the shake method. You either pull the plant up or, you know, you bend it over and you shake it onto a sheet. And so it's the sheet and shake method. And none of those bugs are really very good at holding on. And so you just shake it really hard and you collect all the bugs and then you see what's crawling around on that sheet. Make sure that you do this in a number of places throughout the field. Don't just go to the field edge because that's where bugs like to collect, because that's the first place they get to. So make sure you go farther, like actually into the field to do these shake methods to see what really kind of bug pressure you've got going on.
And hopefully there's not a whole lot, but like you said, there's going to be bugs in every field. It's just, yeah, there is a tolerance level for it though, before you have to start, you know, basically, treating the field to get rid of these bugs. And, you gotta love stink bugs, how they got their name. Literally, they stink when you step on them. So, it's amazing how some bugs get their names, just like fly. A fly is literally what it does, and we just call it a fly. So, all right. Well, James, lots of great information here talking about, with the army worms and just the issues we've been having with them this year. If anybody does have any more questions they would like to ask you about this, how can they get a hold of you?
Yes. And so, you know, if anybody's seen some real issues in their field, some real damage or disease or anything like that too, give me a call at the extension office. The one for Girard is 620-724-8233.
And David, one more time, if anybody has any questions for you about aquatic weeds or record keeping or maybe a few other things, how can they get a hold of you again?
They can reach me by calling the Independence office. That number is 620-331-2690.
All right, guys. Well, again, thank you so much for coming in today. We really do appreciate it. And we will talk to you guys again here in a couple of weeks.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to go ahead and take a break. And when we come back, we will start Open Line. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF.